tended to be a mercenary warrior. His father had been a chef in his native Jiangsu province. His restaurant was recognized as the finest in the region, and the gambling room in back was always filled with fools who thought they might beat the forbidden computer games the old man had smuggled past the government censors. "All this will be yours one day," his father had told him so often that Yuan actually began to believe it. By the time he was 10, Yuan was not only a decent cook, he was the best computer gamer in the province. People signed in from as far away as Shanghai to play against the child prodigy. He let them win only often enough to assure that they'd return and spend more of their money. But when the greenhouse warming shifted the reins and the province's rice paddies turned to dust, his father's restaurant was closed by the government, and Yuan was drafted into the volunteer army that took possession of Vietnam and its invaluable rice bowl in the well-watered Mekong Delta. Then the greenhouse floods swept over the delta, and he was lucky to escape alive. The strangest turn in his life, Yuan thought, was when the government sent him to the Chinese base on the moon to help build the hydroponics farms there. He hated living underground. Trying to feed several thousand workers from the meager crops grown in the long hydroponics trays was a challenge, but not an enjoyable one. Better was the fact that he could jigger the base's computers to run gambling games. Better still, most of the women at Base Mao found him more attractive than the stolid soldiers and technicians who made up the base's male population. Yuan dreamed of returning to Earth once his tour of duty in the army was finished. But once he realized that the government back home would press an unemployed former cook into service wherever they wanted him to work, he signed up with Humphrey Space Systems and became a mercenary soldier. Mercenaries had to eat, and Yuan was ready to feed them. HSS pay was far better than the army's, the uniforms were smarter, and the selection of women was more diverse. What he hadn't expected was that he'd be forced to fight and kill. Aboard the stripped-down attack vessels that battled for control of the belt, even a cook had to take his turn at the weapons console. During the bitter years of the Second Asteroid War, Cao Yuan found that he was good at the cat-and-mouse chases in the dark emptiness of space. He had always been a winner at computer games. Now he maneuvered a real ship and fired real lasers. The enemy vessels were little more than blips on a screen or distant dots in an observation port. They twisted and dodged, but he always, almost, caught up with them and won the game. His youthful skills earned him rapid promotion from cook to captain. This mission to find the renegade and whatever accomplices were riding with him was strange, though. For some reason, Martin Humphreys himself wanted them erased. The war was over. This mission was a personal quest, an exercise in vengeance. God knows what they did to make Humphreys so determined to kill them, Yuan thought. He had not the slightest interest in finding out what it was. "I don't want that powerful egomaniac after me," he told himself. As he looked over the three crew members sitting at their posts on the bridge, Yuan thought, "Find the renegades, destroy them, and earn the bonus Humphreys has promised. Then you can go back to what's left of Shanghai and open the best restaurant they've ever seen." His goal was to own the best of restaurants, with a gaming room in back. A gaming room from which he could challenge the best gamers in the world. Maybe even play against the slick willies of Cellini, them and their smug airs of superiority to any flatlander on Earth. That was his goal. The means to reach it was murder in the depths of space. Cao Yuan was quite content to have things this way. His communications officer glanced up at him as he closed the soundproof door of the comm booth and went to his command chair. "Sir," she said, brushing a long lock of hair from her almond eyes, "the message from headquarters is still running." Yuan favored her with a grin. "Keep recording it. I'll listen to the rest of it when I've got nothing better to do." The comm officer smiled back at him. "I mean, sir, that other messages are piling up in storage." "Other messages?" Yuan asked, surprised. "Who's calling us out here?" She glanced at her screen, pushing that stubborn tress from her face again. A call for assistance from a miner whose propulsion system has malfunctioned. Not our problem, Yuan murmured. Viking was running silent, not emitting either a tracking beacon or telemetry. The vessel was built to return as small a radar profile as possible. Viking was virtually invisible, and Yuan intended to remain that way. A medical emergency on another Rockrat ship. Yuan shook his head. I'm not interested in general chatter. Is there anything specifically for us?
One of the snoops reported a vessel in its area. Then it went dead.
What? Suddenly alert, Yuan stepped to her comm console and bent over her to peer at the screen. Where? The comm officer displayed the coordinates on her screen. Yuan couldn't help noticing the subtle intoxication of her perfume. With the touch of a keypad, she had the computer pull up data on the sensor's location. That's where he wiped out Gormley's fleet, Yuan said, excited. He called to the man at the navigation console. Set a course for these coordinates, top acceleration. Yuan didn't believe that the renegade was visiting the sites of his old battles to recover dead bodies, despite what headquarters claimed. But he didn't press for more information either. My job is not to know why, he told himself. My job is merely to find him and kill him, and whoever is with him.
Smelter Ship Hunter, Bridge. Out of the corner of her eye, Elverda watched Dorn as he sat next to her in the ship's bridge. He had been staring at the crushed remains of the round black sensor, still in the palm of his artificial hand. She glanced at the screens and instrument readouts displayed on the panels curving around them and saw that the ship was functioning normally. "What do you want to do?" she asked. Dorn turned slowly toward her, his human eye looking sad, the other emotionless.
"Find the dead," he answered.
"But they'll be coming to find us." The human eye closed briefly. Then, "They are probably already on their way here." "Shouldn't we get away, then? There are other sites, other locations where battles took place."
"They'll have planted sensors there, too."
Dorn's voice sounded heavy with resignation. "Then what should we do?" she repeated.
"I should speed you back to Earth at maximum acceleration. You would be safe there. Not even Martin Humphreys would dare to harm you were you surrounded by friends and admirers."
"And you?"
"I will return to the belt and try to complete my mission, as much of it as I can."
"I could tell the news media about this. That might protect you." Dorn's lips ticked, as close to a smile as he could come.
"You would tell them that you are trying to protect the monster who is responsible for the Chrysalis massacre? If the general public knew that Humphreys was hunting me down, they would give him an award."
"I can't let him murder you."
"There is no way that you can stop it."
Elverda felt as if she were locked in a closet with the walls closing in on her. "There must be something."
Dorn shook his head slightly. A ponderous swiveling of that half-metal, half-flesh construction. "Besides, I will die anyway, soon enough."
"Die? What are you talking about?"
"My systems are failing."
He raised his right arm slowly.
"The power pack needs replacement. Joints need lubrication. I have the mechanical analog of old age."
"We can get you to Selene and get you overhauled, rejuvenated."
"The monster responsible for Chrysalis? Who would even think of helping me?"
"They wouldn't know. No one knows that..."
"Humphreys knows. Returning to Selene would be a death warrant for both of us."
Alberta stared at him for a long, silent moment. "What can we do?" she kept asking herself. "What can we do?" Dorn broke the silence.
"The bodies from this battle have spiraled outward from this site for hundreds of thousands of kilometers. We should find as many of them as we can and give them proper rites before Humphrey's assassins find us."